The following is an exclusive sports presentation of Extra Sports 1300.
Next, I'd like to introduce...
Throw your hands in the air if you's a true player.
Southern Colorado, it's time for your live and local sports talk show.
That boy is good.
Good and terrible.
Drive Time Sports, presented by Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery. Your sports action hub with over 54 TVs so you don't miss out on the action. Located at Woodman and I-25. The only place to hear talk about your teams.
I think you two dudes are going to become real homies.
Where do we find these guys?
Oh man, I hate those guys.
Here are your hosts, Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden, with the godfather of Colorado Springs Sports Radio, Wheels.
Good Tuesday to you. Welcome to the show. Ryan and Chris coming your way live from Security Service Field. Another $2 Tuesday on tap for you tonight, if there is baseball. I don't know where you are in the city of Colorado Springs right now, but here on the corner of Tutt and Barnes, it is a drenching. It is a monsoon.
Would you call this biblical? Because it's starting to scare me.
It's starting to
scare us. Because we're inside and there's like puddles in here now.
Right. So we're in Not Your Father's Bar, which is awesome. It's great setup in here. We love it. Mm-hmm. Only issue is we're only protected from the elements by a garage door. And as you know, garage doors don't completely seal to the ground.
Right. Well, they do originally, but they're settling and stuff. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So
there's like three areas where it's coming in.
The rain is trying to get us, is what I'm saying. But we're gonna power through. We have all electrical devices elevated.
we adapted and overcame.
We are grounded. I think that's something that you need to do.
Yes.
So it's interesting weather outside, but no official word yet on whether the game tonight has been postponed. But, of course, we will keep you updated should any news come down.
I don't think the hard stuff's going to come down for quite a while. I think you should keep playing.
This is Extra Sports 1300.
The Broncos quarterback competition is taking another turn as Trevor Siemian has been named the starter for preseason game number one on Thursday, with Paxton Lynch getting the start against the 49ers in about a week and a half. Joining us now to chat about it is our good friend from the Gazette, Mr. David Ramsey. David, how are you today?
Hey, great to be with you guys.
Yeah, our pleasure as always. Your thoughts on Trevor Siemian being named the starter for Thursday?
Well, you know, I'm going to that game. So, and I can, you know, among the you know, the throngs of Gazette readers listening right now, I can tell you what I'm probably going to write for the Thursday evening for the Friday paper. I'm going to write about the quarterbacks, right? After I watched that game in Chicago, as someone who enjoys watching exciting football, and as someone whose life is better when the Broncos are good. Right, because of friends and family are happy. I'm really not a Bronco fan anymore, but you know, I grew up in this this wonderful, magnificent state, and you know my family's happier, and you know family gatherings are happier, and hanging out with friends is happier when the Broncos are good. So, I am hopeful that Paxton Lynch emerges as the Broncos starter. I believe that Trevor Siemian was put on earth to be an NFL backup, and that's not really faint praise. That means he's one of the world's top, you know, 50 or 60 quarterbacks. I just don't see him having the arm strength, and more than that, that the frame to thrive and survive as an NFL starter. So, you know, I'm somewhat of a Paxton Lynch believer. I know, and I know that's not like a you know an exclamation mark statement. And I do not see Trevor Siemian as a quarterback who's going to do great things as a starter for the Broncos or anybody else.
So, David, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to frame this question to you. Trevor Siemian, every year he's played football, he's been injured, whether it was in college and the pros, and I think the exception is the year he sat behind Peyton Manning. And everything shows us that Trevor has been winning the job so far. But how do you take into account a guy's injury history? Because if Trevor wins the job, he goes out and gets injured, he's in and out of the lineup, that's going to really mess with the chemistry of the Denver Broncos. When does that become like a really big issue for Trevor Siemian?
Well, part of the thing with injuries is fluky, right? I mean, the knee injury in college, that could happen to anybody, right? I mean, Tom Brady, one of the most durable athletes ever, not just NFL players, but just one of the most durable athletes ever. I mean, he suffered a knee injury. Some of that's fluky. And, you know, last season, you know, the shoulder injury was not as fluky. I think it had something to do with his size. I would say, Chris, if he wins the job, he wins the job. You know, I don't see factoring in the injury factor, the injury quotient into the equation. I actually have no idea that what I just said is actually proper use of quotient and equation. But anyway, if he wins the job, I think you have to go with, you have to go with your best quarterback and hope he stays healthy. I understand how you can hold it against him, but if he beats out Lynch, you can't say, well, Lynch is, potentially more durable. We're going to go with Lynch. One other statement I would make in favor of Paxton, in favor of Trevor, is if Benny Fowler holds on to that pass last season in downtown Nashville against the Titans, Broncos go to the playoffs. And that pass from Siemian was one of the better passes thrown in the NFL last season. It was right in his hands in traffic. And so if Fowler hangs on to that, we would look at Trevor Siemian in a different light. We would see him as a different kind of quarterback. And again, this has come from somebody who's a Trevor Siemian skeptic. But you have to give him that. I mean, he came achingly close to taking the Broncos to the playoffs when he was working with mediocre at best running backs. And you couldn't even say mediocre at best offensive line. So it's not like he was an abject failure last year. He did some good things, but I just do not see him as an NFL starter.
David Ramsey from the Gazette joining us here on Drive Time Sports. We live in a world, David, right now, where Jay Cutler, Trevor Siemian, and Brock Osweiler are all starters of NFL teams. How does that sit with you?
Well, Jay Cutler was the off-season quarterback you wanted, not Tony Romo, right? I mean, look at Jay Cutler's performance two seasons ago before he got hurt. I mean, he was solid. And one thing, I'm not saying Jay Cutler's like, is a great NFL starter. But 2 years ago, before he got hurt, he had a solid season. And in 2014, he had a solid season. Jay Cutler is a monster talent with some mental strangeness about him. Brock Osweiler, any Brock Osweiler critics, and there's a lot, Brock Osweiler critics out there. Remember that throw that he floated down the sideline to Emmanuel Sanders against the Patriots? Right? I mean, that was about as nice a throw as I've seen in this decade from a Bronco quarterback. And I watched Peyton Manning throw the ball, right? I like Brock Osweiler as an NFL starter. Brock Osweiler has a strong chance to be one of the NFL's top 12 to 15 quarterbacks. On the other hand, you know, Trevor Siemian is not at those guys' level with talent, and his potential is not at that at those guys' level. I mean, Jay Cutler is really, really hard to get along with. I mean, I could tell you Jay Cutler stories, but I can't repeat the language he used, right? But, I mean, the guy, nobody who knows anything about football has ever doubted that guy's arm. So, you know, and I'd say this, there's an excellent chance all three of those guys are going to be starting in week one.
And I'm with you on, I think that Jay Cutler, yes, he's prone to interceptions. He's not the warmest person to be around. But I do think that the Dolphins have a chance to still maintain whatever level they were going to play at this year with Ryan Tannehill, to be honest. But Brock Osweiler was an abject failure in Houston. I don't – how do you think that he in Cleveland – is going to resurrect and get back whatever potential that was seen in him in Denver?
Well, and I agree with you. Osweiler had a lost season. And, you know, studying the ups and downs of NFL quarterbacks is a fascinating, you know, exercise. You know, there's many NFL quarterbacks who appear, you know, who seem to have hit bottom, never to rise again, but did. You know, and I'm a dangerous guy when you start talking about sports history because I love sports history. But I mean, for instance, Jim Plunkett. Whoever believed Jim Plunkett would revive and, you know, win two Super Bowls? Just, and I know this is ancient history. You know, whoever believed that Tom Brady, right, sixth round pick, you know, it's never really fully claimed the starting job at Michigan would become the player he's become. You could argue he's the greatest player in NFL history. I could go on and on about quarterbacks who seem to have hit bottom, never to rise, who did in fact rise. I like Brock Osweiler as an NFL starter. I think he's going to be an NFL starter for a long time. Now, you know, he had a good gig when he was starting for the Broncos. He had one of the greatest defenses in NFL history behind him. But he was clutch, and he made some great throws against some really, really strong defenses as the Broncos starter. And I will forever believe that Brock Osweiler would have put more points on the board in the Super Bowl than Peyton Manning did, right? I mean, Peyton Manning, who had a you know, off-the-charts, incredible career, but he had three pretty sorry quarters against Cam Newton and Carolina. So I'm going to go out there and say I think I'll take a little bit of a chance here, and I think Brock Osweiler is going to start 5, 6, 7 years in the NFL before it's over.
We have had injuries to, just off the top of my head, Ryan Tannehill, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton. Let's see. The Broncos have to choose from the lesser of two lessers. And there have been Cleveland Browns don't have – I mean, you believe in Brock Osweiler, but a lot of people don't. So there are a lot of places in the NFL that have uncertainty at quarterback. Yet Colin Kaepernick is still a free agent. Do you believe that we will see Colin Kaepernick play for any NFL, be on an NFL roster by the time the regular season is over?
And I still think the odds are with him. I think it's about 60-40, the odds are with him. Now, you know what, guys, I better be a little careful here because the Gazette editorial page on Sunday went after me. Went after me, a Gazette employee, right? A long-time Gazette employee. So this is a touchy issue, right? If you get a chance, look up that editorial. It was pretty fun. I got a big kick out of it. But I still think the odds are in his favor. You know, and there are a lot of issues that hurt Colin Kaepernick, and not just the kneeling. You know, and this is one thing that the Seahawks said after they had him in. They saw him as a starter. He sees himself as a starter. I believe he's going to have to probably spend some time as a backup and prove himself as a starter again. He's going to have to reconfigure his ego. That's part of his problem. He's not as accurate as many NFL quarterbacks. Okay. It's not just the kneeling. But I still believe that here's what's going to happen. An NFL general manager is going to say to his owner, I want Colin Kaepernick on my roster. He can help us win. He's a legit NFL employee. Let's give him a chance. That's going to be a brave general manager, and he's going to go to his owner, and that owner is going to be brave, and they're going to say, we are going to hire a qualified employee to work for our football team. To me, that will be a nice American moment, right, where a qualified employee is not denied employment because of his societal views. I don't think Colin Kaepernick made a political statement. He made a societal statement. And I want to live in America, and you guys know this, where you're not denied employment because you took a stand for what you believe in. Colin Kaepernick is a complicated character. I understand that. Colin Kaepernick is a complicated quarterback. But you will never convince me that he's not one of the top 50 quarterbacks out there, which means he is absolutely an NFL backup. And it is ridiculous that he's not been given a chance to come compete for a job, not the starting job necessarily, but a backup job. And so that's my hope. But I every day that goes by, the odds go down for him. But I say it's about 60-40, 65-35 that he has a job. And obviously, it's my hope that he's employed.
Our time together is always way too short, David, but we always appreciate the time you do spend with us on a weekly basis. We'll talk soon.
It's a lot of fun, and we'll let's see what happens with Brock the tall man this season. It'd be fun to follow that issue.
Counting down to kickoff of the high school football season. This is 25 teams in 25 days on Drive Time Sports.
It is 25 teams in 25 days as we count you down to the season premiere, year two of Football Night in the Springs here on Extra Sports 1300. Today we put a spotlight on the Classical Academy Titans, and they are replacing one of the best coaches in the city for years. David Burvig went 40-17. As head coach of the Titans. Not an easy act to follow, but from all accounts, this is certainly the man for the job. First-year head coach Justin Rich joins us on the program. Coach, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate that that intro. It's going to be tough to have David in a different role.
Right, but this is... This is a challenge I know that you want to embrace. You wouldn't have it any other way than to try to continue what David built up.
Yeah, we've David's a really, really humble guy, and when he became head coach here 5 years ago, he didn't think that he really had the football acumen, the X and O's to really excel at the job. So he spent most of his focus was building up a great culture, and then found good coaches and let them take care of the X and O's. But the culture is what makes it so special at TCA and makes it so hard to beat. So that's where David's genius is. And I'm not going to say was, because he's still on the coaching staff. It's just kind of a deal where they wanted to keep the staff together. They wanted to keep the culture together and everything rolling. And everybody kind of looked around, and I drew the short straw and so I'm the head coach, and the roles change just a little bit. I just talk to the kids a little bit more.
You get all the blame if things don't go well, Coach. That's certainly trying the short straw. I know it's difficult to explain to people outside of the Classical Academy program on what the culture is, but if you could at least attempt for us to explain what kind of culture there is at TCA that maybe isn't everywhere. Well, what is different about TCA and the culture there?
Well, the school itself is a very, very special school where it was founded from some great people here in Colorado Springs that basically made a school from scratch of what they'd like to see. And that includes a classical education, you know, more of the reading, writing, arithmetic, classics, that kind of stuff, building great character and make it very, very challenging. And, you know, as a football staff, that's kind of the same thing we want too. We want kids that really want to pay attention and want to excel. So again, just like, you know, just like in the classroom where they want us to, you know, the mission of TCA is to create, high character kids and exemplary character, citizens, exemplary citizens. But they hold it really, a really big goal to make sure that the test grades and everything also comes out very, very high at TCA. So it's the same thing with us. We want to build better men through football, and we also want to win every game we play. You know, it's kind of that deal where, you know, we're going to build the character. We're going to we talk about love a lot in the program and, you know, that brotherly love and playing for each other. But, you know, if they're going to keep score, we'd like to win.
Justin Rich, the new head coach at the Classical Academy, joining us here on Drive Time Sports. How are you a better head coach potentially now than you were when you coached at Palmer?
I think the first time anybody's a head coach, it's kind of tough as you're trying to figure out how to, you know, kind of wear all the hats and figure everything out. You know, at Palmer, the situation at Palmer and the situation at TCA are a lot different. I think we did a lot of really great things at Palmer. You know, I told the AD when I left the job, I said, you know, I feel like 6 days out of the week, we were better than we were when I got there. It's just, you know, the night they kept score, we had a hard time. You know, as you look at some personnel issues, we're in that 5A classification there with, you know, the same league as Valor Christian. Both years we're in that league. Only two teams out of our league did not make the playoffs. So, you know, that was a little bit different. And then there's just, you know, there's some things. And you know, I've talked to some other head coaches that have gone to schools that kind of fit the same demographic as Palmer. You know, and you know, about the only thing I wish I would have done better is you know, win that first game. And we were very close, but you get some momentum in there. You know, winning football games is hard, and a lot of it is a mentality. And I love my boys at TCA. I love the kids at Palmer, too. But, you know, our boys at TCA really believe every time we kick off a football game that we're going to find a way to win it. And, you know, at Palmer, it's you know, when you haven't had a lot of success and something bad happens in the third or fourth quarter, it's easy for that doubt to creep in. So that was one of the things. And then just some bad luck. You know, year one in our scrimmage, our preseason scrimmage, we lost our quarterback. And we're trying to replace him with two sophomores. And in 5A ball in a league like that, starting a sophomore is not ideal. And then our second year, our center was 140 pounds. And we were playing against, you know, kids that were playing, going to D1 and D2 institutions. So just some personnel factors. But, you know, the kids worked hard at both places. And you know, I learned a lot at Palmer, too. And, you know, you always wish, you always kind of, I feel bad for those kids the first time you're a head coach, but, you know, I think I still have a relationship with some of them. Wish it would have been better on Friday nights, but enjoyed my time there. I still have some brown and white Palmer gear.
So, Coach, you play in the Tri-Peaks League, and in your league you have La Junta, Florence, Manitou, Lamar, Salida. I went to school at a smaller school. I went to Grand Junction, and every time a Denver team came over, man, we took pride in just putting it to them and sending them on the bus back over the pass. When you're playing these smaller teams, smaller cities, do you feel like you get their A game because the big bad team from Colorado Springs is coming to town?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I went to North Park, which is a tiny town between Fort Collins and Steamboat, so we'd get to play some of the smaller Front Range schools and tournaments and stuff, so I kind of understand the mentality. But, you know, what we get with these kids, these other schools is, you know, when you talk about La Junta, Lamar, Florence, you're talking about a rich history of high school football either way, so they're always going to be well-prepared. But it's, you know, it's what we get as the classical academies. A lot of people don't really know what we are. So a lot of people think we're a private school. A lot of people, you know, don't know what a classical education is. So they're kind of expecting a private school kind of deal. So what we have to establish each year and almost every game is that we're going to go out and be a physical, tough-nosed football team. And I think that, you know, it's the mentality of some of those teams where they think that we are a private school, not a public charter, that they're going to come in and try to push around, you know, pushing around a bunch of perceived rich kids. So that's something we have to face every time. But we do take very, very good pride in saying that we're going to go out and try to be the most physical team in every game we play in. And we really got after it last year. We ran for a lot of yards last year on the ground.
And certainly, as is the case with all teams around here, having to find new guys to step up, and we're excited to see who will indeed step up for the Titans. They open the season on September 1st against Sierra. Justin, really appreciate the time. I'm the last one to do this, but congratulations on the gig, and we hope to have you on these airwaves sooner rather than later. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, and thanks for doing this deal. It's pretty cool for the entire city. You doing this?
For me, it's pretty easy. I just want to be better than I was yesterday.
The NFL season is right around the corner.
I want the best guy for this football team.
And Denver's got a lot to figure out.
I feel way more comfortable out there with those guys.
This is Drive Time Sports training camp coverage presented by Tilted Kilt.
It's gonna be me.
Hour number two on a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Coming your way from a gorgeous, sunny Security Service Field. Remember that crap about the rain we said in the first hour?
Yeah.
Don't even worry about it. Super sunny now.
They took the tarp off already.
Yeah, the tarp's off the field. We're ready for ball, man.
Exactly.
So, yes, of course, this is our Broncos training camp coverage presented by Tilted Kilt. Your chance to get entered to win your fantasy draft at the Tilted Kilt coming up in mere moments. But yesterday, the news came down. Trevor Siemian will start against the Bears. Game two will be reserved for Paxton Lynch to start. Not to say that they won't play in each other's games, but Trevor starts against the Bears, Paxton against the Niners.
Yes.
And today, after day 11 of training camp, Trevor Siemian spoke about when he thought that things kind of clicked for him.
Yeah, I can't tell exactly when, but probably a week or so, I just kind of, you know, felt a little more comfortable, like things were clicking for me, and I kind of, you know, got a big picture thought of how we're trying to attack scheme and defenses, and I've just felt comfortable probably that last week getting going, and also getting a feel for all the guys. You know, in the first, second group, doesn't matter, just getting a feel for how guys run, what they do well, and I think we're all in a good spot right now.
So there's Trevor Siemian speaking of that.
I say something without being critical? The tone of which he speaks. Like, if you put that, like, everybody dogs Jay Cutler. Like, everybody dogs Jay Cutler, and he sounds so much like him. Like,
but
there's no ups or downs. It's like
right,
a flat line.
Trevor Siemian has. The other thing that you can say is you can speak through me because I can be critical. Yes, Trevor Siemian has very little personality, but he's not a jerk like Jay Cutler.
But like Jay Cutler, like, but the way when he addresses the media, it's the same thing. Like, he really didn't say anything.
But that's the whole. But I would disagree, okay. And here's how I would disagree, and then see if you disagree back with me.
Okay.
Part of the issue here with this quarterback competition is that with Paxton Lynch, it's all about him. Not to say that he's being selfish or anything like that. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But with Trevor Siemian, the discussion is, can he just get the ball to Demaryius Thomas? Can he get the ball to Emmanuel Sanders? Other than that, we don't care. But with Paxton Lynch, and I would actually say that you'll agree with me, because I feel like the expectation level for Paxton Lynch is that he will win ball games.
Yeah.
That is the expectation for Paxton Lynch.
And Trevor won't lose you a game.
Exactly. That is the difference between these two quarterbacks right now. And the difference is Trevor Siemian is doing exactly what he was told to do, and Paxton Lynch is doing the exact thing that he was told not to do, and that's make mistakes that in a game situation will cost the Denver Broncos.
No, and like, I'm just going to say this. There is in no way, shape, or form that I feel like Paxton Lynch at this moment today is a better quarterback than Trevor Siemian. Mm-hmm. The one thing Paxton Lynch is a much better athlete. And so, yes, I believe Trevor, if we're keeping score, Trevor has won the job. But all that does for me is make me sad. For two reasons. Number one, we're going to be seeing more three and outs, last in the NFL on third down conversions, never throwing it down the field. But what I'm saying is that I feel like we're settling for mediocre. I guess that's the thing, and I do think he has won the job so far. I do, for sure. He's the better man right now. But like, this is the Denver Broncos. We can't, like, accept mediocre.
Well, here's the deal.
Thank you for the whistle wheels. You did bring me back into order, yes.
But here's the problem. You could say all that stuff you want about Trevor Siemian, and you're not wrong.
Right.
But guess what? I would rather lead the league in three
and
outs.
Oh, my God. What's the worst?
Than lead the league in interceptions.
Not
and
me. That's, no way.
And that's where we are with Paxton Lynch.
Yes, you are right.
He can't stop throwing it to the other guy.
Yes.
That is the issue right now.
He's very much like Jay Cutler, where he thinks he can squeeze it in there. But I got to tell you, football for me, I love the Denver Broncos, but football for me is more about entertainment. I hated watching those games. The last 2 years, yes, even with Peyton Manning, it was so hard to watch. It was difficult. And, like, I love watching the defense. But, like, the entertainment value, man. It's like, that's why I watch.
But did you enjoy watching the year they won the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay.
No.
You enjoyed
the playoffs?
So
yes.
You would take. So let me get this straight. You would take the year that they lost the Super Bowl versus the year they won the Super Bowl
for the regular
the year
season.
They lost
yes.
The Super Bowl, but you have to take it in its totality.
No. Because I'm just talking entertainment value. Every Super Bowl is good. But you have to suffer through 16 games mm-hmm. before you get to that. Like, and then the playoffs happen, and then you got the Super Bowl. Yes, Peyton Manning's last year with Brock. Oh, my goodness, man. It gives me a stomach ache right now, even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Just like Peyton had when he ran into the locker room against San Diego. That's what my stomach felt like all year watching that. But I root for Paxton Lynch or for Trevor. I think people think I don't root for him. If all of a sudden in this preseason game, he breaks a 25-yard out to DT, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm waiting for, but I don't feel like we're ever going to get that.
Let's shift over to Paxton Lynch wheels, if you don't mind. To your point, Chris, where you say Paxton Lynch brings more excitement or has the opportunity to bring more excitement. Paxton Lynch was asked today whether he felt pressure to make big plays once he does get in the game.
No, I don't see it that way. Like I said, I didn't want to make it, you know, about me going out there, making sure I played good, and that's all I was worried about. I'm more worried about the offense going out there and succeeding as a group.
So
I call shenanigans on that answer, by the way.
But so let me ask you this. Do you feel like Paxton Lynch now, in order, because we agree, everyone agrees, there's nobody that is worth his weight as a person who watches football that thinks that Paxton Lynch is winning the quarterback competition.
Right.
At this point,
Trevor's winning.
So Trevor's winning.
Yes.
Okay. We all established that. Here's the other. So let me ask you this. Do you believe that Paxton Lynch must, against Chicago and against San Francisco, make big explosive plays to beat out Trevor Siemian?
No.
Does it have to be that drastic?
No, I think he has to limit his mistakes.
Okay.
And the funny thing is like, that was a BS answer. And the reason why I think that is, think of one quarterback and that wasn't like a prima donna. We all know Drew Brees is like the sweetest dude ever, and he does great things, blah, blah, blah.
Peyton.
But, and Peyton, the same thing. But when these guys get behind the center, they're prima donnas. They want to make the best plays, all eyes on me type guys. And that's what drove Peyton Manning to sit there and study with his helmet on, leg in the hot tub with the iPad. That's why those guys are like that. So if Paxton Lynch comes up to me and says, you know what, it's not about me. Well, it kind of is. It kind of is.
But you have to have – but you have to
He needs
show,
to get to the level of where his weapons are.
You have
he
to,
needs to get to the level of Emmanuel and to Demaryius, and he's not close to that yet.
Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders would fit in nicely on the defense.
Yes.
But because of their bravado
Garrett
and
Bowles
their
too.
Swagger.
Yeah.
The offense is trying to get there.
Right.
So you're saying that – Paxton has to be that way, but what kind of answer? Like even the cockiest of even
just
Jay,
don't address
even
that
Jay
part.
Cutler says it's about the team,
right?
Even Jay Cutler does. So his answer, I get what you're saying,
but it doesn't sound
his,
the same. It sounds like he's being falsely humble because he doesn't know what to say
like
yet because he's a young guy. He's just a young. It is about the team, but guess what? When the quarterback plays well, what's the offense do? They're succeeding. If the quarterback plays well, offense is good. Quarterback plays poorly, offense stinks unless you have Adrian Peterson and you hand him the rock 30 times.
If you're not spending every waking moment checking us out online, you'd better have a good excuse.
Yeah.
We've loaded up our website with stories, videos, interviews, and contests. Hit it now. Extrasports1300.com.
I have good news and bad news here before we get to our good friend Mark Knutson. The good news is Charlie Blackmon led off the game against the Indians with the home run. The bad news is I'm looking at the Nuggets jerseys and I hate them with a passion.
Are they
all
up already?
Yes. They're showing Gary Harris rotating 360 and they are just the
Is that
worst.
On Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man, I'm so upset. thankfully, I always enjoy talking baseball with Mark Knutson, so I will be put into a better mood. Mark, how are you today?
Brian, I didn't know you were such a fashion expert. I didn't know you did the fashion critiques.
Very much am.
Mark,
Fashion
just,
Week in Paris, I'm right there.
Just so you know, Ryan is sporting Paul George's shoes right now, and he's a basketball fashion dude. Yeah, he is.
Oh, okay.
So have you lost
your guy? You like the Lakers classic purple and gold and the Celtics green and white into the classic stuff, right? I'm with you. That's me, too.
There are classic.
Yeah.
The Nuggets don't have a classic look except Rainbow Skyline, and that's what I was hoping for, but I didn't get that. But, yeah, Celtics, Lakers, I mean, you don't mess with those. But the Nuggets, they have no history.
They didn't do nothing.
All right. An impossible transition. Chris, hold your horses there. Impossible transition. Don Baylor passing away yesterday. You had a unique opportunity to play for him, get to know him as a person and as a manager. Can you somehow encapsulate for us what Don Baylor was like as both of those things?
Well, we knew this was coming. This wasn't any great secret that he was not doing well. And, You know, we've just obviously hoping for the best. But it still, when it does ultimately happen, it kind of shocks the system, and you think back to the times. I mean, my favorite memories of my time with Don Baylor didn't involve the Rockies. He was a coach, a meeting coach of the Brewers when I was in Milwaukee, and specifically brought in to kind of be a mentor for Gary Sheffield. And Rube was the kind of guy that was a no-nonsense guy. He was he respected the game to the utmost. I don't know, you guys can probably look at the stats. At one point, he led in the history of baseball the most times being hit by a pitch. And once in his entire career, he charged the mound. And he told me that's when John Denny threw his head on purpose, and that's when he went out to the mound. Otherwise, he'd go to first base. The ball would drop to the ground. He would go to first base, and he'd try to take out the middle infielder on a double play ball. So he played the game exactly the right way it was supposed to be played, and he carried himself that way off the field as well. Great story he told me about having dinner with Reggie Jackson one night in Anaheim, and they set him off in the corner, kind of secluded, and because Reggie told him he didn't want to be bothered. Told him, wait a minute, I don't want to be bothered by autograph seekers. Then Reggie got mad because no one was coming over to try to get his autograph, and when somebody finally did, he bit the guy's head off, and Don said he wanted to slap Reggie Jackson upside the head. Said, what's wrong with you? This, you know, that's not how you handle yourself. So it didn't matter who you were. If you were a scrub like me or you were a superstar like Reggie Jackson, Don was going to make certain that you carried yourself and did things the right way. Nolan Ryan is another guy who's been in that same category. Carry yourself like a pro on and off the field and, you know, respect the game. And he was so helpful to young guys. And he was so, his presence, he just brought character into the locker room. He brought character with him. That's why so many teams wanted him. Towards the end of his career, he changed teams almost every year, you know, as a DH. But teams wanted him because he brought that character. He won like 3 World Series in a row with 3 different teams. He was a very unique man in that respect. And I think, obviously, baseball suffered a big loss when he was no longer able to be part of the game. And now it's even more so that he's gone.
So, Mark, Don Baylor comes to Rockies originally with the franchise. He was able to get the Rockies into the playoffs after the third year with a expansion franchise. That's just unheard of because you're really like starting from scratch. How instrumental is Don Baylor when he started it to where the Rockies are today? Did he help carve out a path in like, you know, the scouting and everything that kind of the Rockies do?
I would probably say no to that because I don't think he had that kind of authority. He and Bob Gebhardt didn't have a great working relationship. They both were very determined that they had the right plan of attack. And Geb wanted things his way, and Don wanted things his way. And half of Don's original coaching staff was picked by Geb, and half was picked by Don. And it was oil and water in a lot of situations. Don was a young guy at that point with no managerial experience except for the 3 games he managed us in Milwaukee when I was a Brewer, when our manager Tom Trebhorn was suspended. So Don was new to managing. I don't think that he really got involved in player personnel and stuff like that, like for scouting to any degree. But again, he brought that character to a clubhouse. He was bound and determined in the first spring training we were not going to lose 100 games in 1993. Most expansion teams, as you mentioned, are starting from scratch, and losing 100 games is a very real possibility with an expansion team. But he was bound and determined. It mattered to him that we did not lose 100 games, that we went out and played the game the right way. And I think we ended up losing 92 or something like that. And he was still unhappy about that. Knowing what he knew about the nature of an expansion team, he still had expectations the way the game was supposed to be played and the way we were supposed to do things. I think during his tenure in Colorado, he was really focused on what was going on with the big league club on the field. And I think he was prior to the era where managers got involved in the behind-the-scenes stuff as much as they do today.
Before we let you go, Mark, want to ask a question about the current Rockies. I believe they have the lead right now in the Cleveland Indians. You wrote recently about the moves to get Pat Neshek and also Jonathan Lucroy. What do you think those moves ensure them? Is it that they just make the postseason, that they win game 163, something better than that? What did those moves ensure, in your opinion?
Well, I think what it did was it put a jolt through the clubhouse. Like, hey, they're serious. They want to. You saw what happened when the Astros didn't sign anybody, didn't make any moves. You know, the Astros with their second best record in baseball, and their clubhouse, guys in their clubhouse were visibly unhappy and vocally unhappy that they didn't make a move. You heard Arenado say, you know, now we know management's on our side and they want us to win. They're all about winning and not just about making money, so on and so forth. So I think it set a jolt through the clubhouse say, hey, this is serious now. We need to, you know, we've had a great run right now. We need to pick it up a couple notches. Is that going to be enough to catch the Dodgers? Probably not. The Dodgers are 15 games ahead and playing out of their minds. Now, having said that, the Dodgers are about to set off on their most difficult stretch of the season. They have very few home games left this year. They only play 8 home games in the month of August. So what the Rockies went through in June, travel-wise, the Dodgers are about to go through. And I suspect they'll close the gap. Rockies and the Diamondbacks will probably close the gap a little bit during this period. But nonetheless, the Dodgers' lead is probably insurmountable as far as winning the division. And that's okay, because I think what the Rockies really want to do now is be that team that posts 163, as you put it. And I think they have a little bit of a, you know, jump in their step now, having gotten these two guys. Have the two of them made a huge difference on the field? Not yet. Luke Kroy is a good, solid guy, but has he won him a game yet? No. Hischek's been basically just okay. He hasn't been great since he's come over. So I think on the field, they will help, certainly. They're dramatically upgrade the bullpen and the catching. But the major difference is what it's going to do to the attitude and the effort put forth by the other guys on the squad. And I think you're seeing some of that right now. Hopefully they keep it going. Diamondbacks aren't going to go away, but you got like the Rockies' chances of hosting the wild card game, which would be, spectacular for all of us.
Right. Hey, game 163 has been kind to the Rockies in the past. I would invite people to log on to woodypage.com and read Mark's the latest column, which just puts a big old smile on Chris's face. Yeah. How many top 25 teams in college football could Trevor Siemian play for? not many, I think, is the Cliff Notes version of that. But log on to woodypage.com to read all of Mark's stuff. Mark, we always appreciate the time and the insight, especially on a day like this. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, guys, my pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
There's Mark Knutson, former Rockies pitcher, now writes for woodypage.com. Great insight there into the life of Don Baylor. Tomorrow, Country Club of Colorado will be out there broadcasting live. Come and join us if you're a member. If not, tune in right here on Extra Sports 1300. 'Cause I've had enough.